Okay, we're in the book of James in chapter 3, and we were looking at verse 15. I do need to begin with a correction from last week. I only looked at one of the words for that descends in verse 15. And it has the word esti, which means is or are, either singular or plural, depending. But it does have another word, which is kar kamai, which means to come or go down. So there was actually two words there, and I overlooked one of those. So I wanted to make that correction. And as far as that second word, to come or go down, it's generally a commonly used word. It's not the typical word for if someone is coming down from a high place, like when Jesus came down from the mountain. It's a different word. Katabolai is the word for that. Which is also the word that's used when they were telling Jesus to come down from the cross. So this particular word that's there is kind of like how when we will say, I went down to wherever, I went down to the store, or something like that. It doesn't necessarily mean directionally down. It can be, but it doesn't. It's more of the common word for when they're describing coming or going. It's used a slew of times in the New Testament in that way. But anyway, so just wanted to clarify that since I had overlooked that word last week. And I appreciate Brother Jan for pointing that out as he noticed that from the Strong's dictionary and that he was looking at. In this context, he's talking about this wisdom in verse 15, as opposed to another wisdom in verse 17. So there are two kinds of wisdom that he's speaking about and making a contrast between. Now, the one that he's referring to in verse 15, this wisdom, it is not from where? He says that descends not from above. Now, verse 17, he then speaks about the wisdom that is from above. So that's the distinction between the two wisdoms that he's speaking about here in this latter part of James 3. There's one that is from above, and the other is not from above. And they're opposite, as we're going to see. And we mentioned this last week. I mean, there is a right and a wrong of many, many things, whether it's faith or doctrine and those kinds of, or with Christ and the Holy Spirit. I mean, there's the gospel. There's one true and right one, but there are also the false kinds. And so in this case, there is God's wisdom, and then there's the other kind, which he is speaking about in verse 15. Now, in verse 13, when he says, "Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you?" What kind of wisdom is he talking about there? That we should have. He's talking about the wisdom from God here. And if we have that, then that will be demonstrated. We would show that out of a good behavior, our works with meekness of wisdom, of that wisdom. So that's the wisdom that is from above. Then is the contrast, verse 14. We either are going to have God's wisdom in our hearts, which is, going back to the very beginning of the book of James, is an essential component for us to be able to spiritually grow to completion, to be complete and entire, lacking nothing. It was right after he says that we should be lacking nothing in James 1 verse 4, verse 5 says, if any of you lack wisdom, So that's the specific thing that he mentioned that we could be lacking in. And very commonly, people are lacking in that to some extent. Well, we don't need to be lacking in God's wisdom at all. So that's what he was teaching in chapter 1 and is teaching that again here in the latter part of James 3. And if we do have all of God's wisdom in us, then if we're not lacking that, then we have a very good, we're very likely to be full grown in the image of Christ then, where we would be complete and entire, lacking nothing, including that wisdom. And then what will be the fruits of that kind of heart? What will it produce in terms of our words and our works or deeds, our actions? Well, it will be good. It will be good behavior, good works. Now, if we are lacking in that wisdom of God, well, are we going to have some of the other kind in there and other things in our hearts? Well, that's the problem that we have while we're growing in Christ, that we're battling to purge out these things that are not part of the love of God, have formed in us all of those things that are part of His love. But while we're going through that process, then our heart has a mixture of good and evil there. Things that are good and also things that are evil or don't work God's righteousness. This is what he was teaching us the few verses before verse 13, that's a problem. It will manifest itself in our tongues when our heart has a mixture of treasures there. So what kind of, what are we going to be producing as far as our words? Is it going to be all good or all bad, or is it going to be some of both? And what does he say about that? From the same mouth proceeding the good and evil, or as he puts it, the blessing and cursing in verse 10. My brethren, what does he say? Is that okay? Just as long as we have more of the good than the bad? What does he say about having a mixture there? Ought not to be. And that's the same point he's pressing now in verse 14. So we need to be endued with knowledge and have that wisdom of God in us, which will be manifest in our words and in that good behavior that we'll be showing with from which we'll be showing our works with meekness of wisdom. But he says, if you have bitter envy and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom. So that which would involve this bitter envying and strife, where is it from? Well, that's verse 15. This wisdom descends not from above. So then where is it from? But, he says, is earthly, sensual, devilish. So he uses three different words to identify the source of it. After already saying that it's not from above. So there's where it's not from. Where is it from? And so when he says earthly, sensual, devilish, that word earthly, it means literally worldly, of this world. It's the word that's translated when he's talking about things celestial and things terrestrial in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 40. That word translated terrestrial is the same word. It's of this earth, worldly, of this world. It's also another place it's used that we will probably readily identify is in Philippians chapter 3 and verse 19. When he says, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, and whose glory is in their shame, who mind earthly things. So that's just a couple of examples where that word is used elsewhere. But it's clearly talking about what is of this earth or of this world. Well, is that what we're supposed to be looking at? Is that what we should have in us? Obviously not. And that's where he's... describing that this wisdom is from, that it is from this world. It's earthly. That word sensual, it's psuchikos, it's hard to say, but it's from psuche, which is the word for soul. But it means sensitive. I guess we would kind of use the English word soul in that way if somebody is soulful, but it's kind of along those lines. But it means literally sensitive. There's just a couple of places where that's used, but it's also 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verses 44 and 46. So that same chapter about the resurrection, and he talks about what is terrestrial. Then he also says there is what is the natural body, and that's the word for natural. So it's again, it's a word that relates to. It's the opposite of what is spiritual. It is from. Really, it pertains again to this world to physical things, and then devilish. Now that really gets to the heart of it, because whatever is of this world, and we looked last week at John 8:21-24, because we either belong to God and to what is of His world. Or we belong to this one. And Jesus told those Jews that in John 8:21-24, that where he was going, and he was going to be going back to his Father and was going to be in heaven. And he says, where I go, you cannot come. Now, that is the most serious thing of all. I mean, wasn't he telling them they were not going to be able to be in heaven in the very dwelling place of God and where Christ would be with his Father? They wouldn't be able to go there. And what was the reason? He says, I'm from above, you are from beneath. So they were not from above, they were from here. They were of this world. And so we're either one or the other. And that's why in many places he clearly speaks about we're either going to be the child of God or the child of the devil. Spiritually, we're going to be a child of one or the other. There's no in between. There's no other option. What is going to reveal whose child we are? We have a verse about that, 1 John 3:10. In this manifest, who is the child of God versus the child of the devil? 1 John 3:10, he says, in this the children of God are manifest, and the children of the devil. So this is a key verse when he's saying, here's what is going to reveal whose child you are. It's going to reveal the children of God and the children of the devil. Now, is there any other kind of children in this verse or anywhere else? There's not. We're one or the other. We have one Father, spiritually. And it's either God or the devil. Now, you remember also in John 8, what did he tell those Jews who didn't believe in him? Who was their father? John 8:44, you're of your father the devil, he told them. So there was a very big difference between being a children, spiritually children of Abraham and therefore of God, versus not being children of God, which meant being a child of the devil. What's going to reveal who our Father is and whose children we are? 1 John 3:10 says, in this the children of God are manifest, and the children of the devil. Whosoever doeth not righteousness is not of God, neither he that loveth not his brother. Well, the flip side of that is, whoever is doing righteousness and who does love his brother. If we don't love one another, and if we're not doing what's right, that's what doing righteousness is. If we love one another and we do right, which is defined as keeping the commandments of God, if we're doing His will, keeping all of His commandments, and loving one another, which is a major part of His commandments, as we know, then whose child are we? We're children of God. But if we don't do that, I mean, how can we be children of God if we're not doing what God says is right? And if we're not loving one another, then whose child are we? Then we're children of the devil. Now, it's not based on what we claim, is it? And that goes back to what we saw there in James chapter 3 and verse 14. If we have bitter ending in our and strife in our hearts, so when he asks that question, who is a wise man endued with the knowledge among you? We all want to raise our hand and say, yep, that's me. When we start to claim stuff like that, is that what's going to make it so, just our claiming it? Well, if we claim it, but if we have bitter ending and strife in our hearts, then he says, glory not and lie not against the truth. If we say we have that wisdom and knowledge from God, but then we have that evil in our hearts, then are we telling the truth or are we telling a lie if we say we're filled with God's wisdom? Well, then we have the other wisdom, which he says is not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. Now, there's the ultimate source there. The whatever is of this world, if it's of men, and we looked at this also last week when it comes to because it's going to either be from God or not, just like Jesus, the way he presented the baptism of John when he asked those. Well, the Jews were asking him by what authority he was doing the things that he was doing. And when he was in the temple, then it was during his last week on this earth, and he said he would answer that question if they would answer his question, and he said, the baptism of John, is it from heaven or of men? So those are the options. It's one or the other. Now, of course, they didn't answer the question because they didn't want to tell what they really thought, because then they knew that the people would reject them. Because they really believed the baptism of John was not from heaven, that it was of men. But they were different from the people in that, but they didn't want them to know that. So they were being hypocrites. And he knew that, and that's why he asked them that. And they said, we cannot tell. And he said, neither do I tell you by what authority I do these things. But the baptism of John, was it from heaven or of men? Those are the choices. And in anything, when it comes to religion, I mean, that is the question to ask. That's the question we must ask of whatever we're doing. In whatsoever we do, think, say, or do. I mean, that's the question we've got to ask. Is what we're doing, is it from heaven or is it of men? Do we have God's authority to be saying, doing whatever that is? If we don't, then what we're doing is, if it's not from him, where is it from? Well, one way of putting it is saying it is earthly or sensual or of men. But if we fully understand it, whatever is of men, and the wisdom of men, which is a term he uses, teaching for doctrines, the commandments of men. So these things that are of men and not of God, who is the source of that, though? Who was the murderer from the beginning? Who is the father of lies? Yeah, the devil. So false doctrine, if somebody's teaching for doctrines, the commandments of men, that's teaching false doctrine. Who is the ultimate source of false doctrine? Well, 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 1, he says, now the Spirit speaketh expressly that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. So these doctrines of men that are not God's truth, well, it's a lie. If it's false, it's a lie. It's not what is true. It's not from God. And who's the father of lies? The devil is. So the doctrine, what's the difference between the doctrines of men and doctrines of devils? It's the same thing. But it's just getting to the root source when he identifies it as doctrines of devils. he gets to the root source here in James 3, verse 15, about this wisdom that is earthly, sensual, when he says devilish. And daimonimon, that one's hard to say. Anyway, it's formed of the word deep, where we get our word demon. That one is really, really tough. But that's where the word demon, or which is translated devils. Now, diabolos is the Greek word for the devil, Satan. Daimonion is a word for what's translated devils, like in James 2:19 that we saw. The devils also believe and tremble. That's daimonion. This is a form of that. This word here, when he says it's devilish, it's of the devils, is what that means. So there's the source of it. So just like the doctrines of men are doctrines of devils, this wisdom of men, it's devilish. It's something that's false and evil, and that's where it's from. So whatever man gets, whatever he's believing and teaching and doing that's wrong, who gave it to him? Well, the same one that gave it to Eve in Genesis 3. It's the devil. So he's letting us know, and this is why if we have bitter envy and strife in our hearts, that's a wisdom that's of the devil's. That we need to remember that, because if we're practicing something, we have something in our hearts, because whatever we're speaking or practicing is from the heart. And if what's coming out of us is something that he says is of the devil's, then do we want to have something devilish in our hearts? I mean, I've had the opportunity over the years many times to have to give the news to somebody that they had cancer in their body somewhere. And anybody that gets that news, I mean, I don't think I've seen an exception yet. If you find out something like that, that you got something like that in your body, what's the first thing you're wanting done? You want that out. I mean, nobody wants that in their body for a minute. I mean, just thinking about that, it's still there. I mean, everybody's in a hurry to try to find, to get from that point when they hear that news, to get to the point where that is taken out of the body somehow. I mean, that would be anybody's goal. I mean, we understand that. We don't want something like that growing in our physical bodies. But how do we feel about having something of the devil that's in our spiritual hearts? Are we just going to be kind of, no big deal about that? Or should we feel that same kind of urgency, or more so, that we want that out? That we want to get purged out of us anything that's like that. I mean, why would we want anything in our hearts that is ungodly and is from, that's in any way associated with the devil? That is putting it into perspective, which he's doing there, so that we can understand that. And then he also lets us know in verse 16. Using the same words that he used in verse 14 about that envying and strife, if that's what's in our hearts, he tells us where it's from in verse 15. Then he tells us in verse 16 what it produces or causes. I mean, envying and strife are themselves evil things, but they also, they're not inactive, inert. I mean, they're producing something. What does he say in verse 16? For where envying and strife is, there is confusion in every evil work. So if there's bitter envying and strife in our hearts, is that all that's going to be there? Is that all that's going to be produced? Or is that in turn going to produce other evil? Well, that's what he says. So when we were in verse 14 and we studied extensively those two words for the three of them, when we got the bitter envying and strife, and we looked at details of all of that, which we're not going to repeat that. I mean, we're just really refreshing ourselves, but we saw many scriptures that showed the damage of that. What happens if there's bitterness that's among us, a root of bitterness? How many get defiled by that if it's allowed to just remain and fester? You remember that in Hebrews 12. I mean, that's something that will defile many. And if we're biting and devouring each other, remember Galatians chapter 5 on that, and we can be consumed. It will destroy. And we looked at a number of those passages that showed the destruction and how it will completely destroy a brethren, a congregation. I mean, it can destroy a church, and will if it's allowed to go unstopped. So these things produce so much damage, which is what he's emphasizing here now in verse 16, where envying and strife is. There is confusion and every evil work. All right, that word confusion, that's a good one to look at. And for whatever reason, the Greek words that are in this particular part of James 3 are... this is kind of a tongue twister also. Akatastasia. All right, that's my one effort at that. So you can come back at me after we finish and say, you butchered that pronunciation, Macon. I'll say, I'm sorry, but... And you may roll it off your tongue much nicer than I can. But in any event, that's my effort at that. But that word means instability. That's the literal meaning of it. The root of it, it means inconstant. If something is confusion, does that reflect instability? It's not a bad translation. It's not. We have four other places where that word's used in the New Testament, and it's in a similar context whenever we see it. But we can see how God uses it elsewhere, which should help us to be able to see what he's talking about of what is produced by envying and strife. It produces this confusion. Where that envying and strife is, that we will find this confusion. Luke 21 and verse 9 is one of the places where this is also found. Luke 21 verse 9. We'll look at verses 8 and 9 here. He said, Jesus is speaking. He said, "Take heed that you be not deceived, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and the time draweth near. Go you not therefore after them. But when you shall hear of wars and commotions, be not terrified, for these things must first come to pass, but the end is not by and by." These words that he's speaking in verses 8 and 9, what is the context of? What does that have to deal with? Well, it's in verse 7 that they asked him a question. They asked him, saying, "Master, but when shall these things be, and what sign will there be when these things shall come to pass?" What things? Well, he had just told them when they showed him those great stones of the temple, and he told them that the days would come in which there will not be left one stone upon another that will not be thrown down. So they're wanting to know when that's going to happen. When did it happen, by the way? When was the temple destroyed, and who did it? It was the Romans, and it was in... It was in the year 70 A.D. That's when that happened. So Jesus is speaking when he was asked, when would that be? He's teaching them about that. But when they would hear of wars and commotions, Well, it was going to be 40 years. Now, there was going to be a lot of wars and commotions and things that were going to happen over the course of that next 40 years. So every time something bad would happen, did they need to get think, okay, now this is when the temple, now this is what's going to lead to the destruction of the temple? No. In fact, later he would tell them when the armies came and surrounded Jerusalem, then that's when they needed to run. Wars and commotions, that word commotions, that's that same Greek word that's translated confusion in James 3:16. But we can see that what it's the kinds of thing that's going on in the world when there's wars and stuff like that. I mean, that's nothing good. That's the kind of instability that he's talking about there. When he said in James 1, that's that form of the word in James 1:8, when he said a double-minded man is unstable in all of his ways. I mean, that's a form of that word there. But 1 Corinthians 4, chapter 14, verse 33, this one I think we all know well. Who is not the author of confusion? He says, God is not the author of confusion. Now, what's the context of 1 Corinthians 14 when he says that? What kind of confusion was he referring to? In the assemblies, if things aren't done decently in order, which decently in order is described and defined in 1 Corinthians 14, there's an orderly way for the assemblies to be conducted. And not doing it decently in order, the opposite of that would be confusion, which God is not the author of. So God plainly distances himself from that kind of thing. So confusion, that's not of the nature of God, but that's the kind of thing that one would see, particularly when there's envying and strife. There's going to be that instability. There's going to be commotion. Nothing is going to be smooth and right where envying and strife are around. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 5. These are the things that we have to endure as followers of Christ. 2 Corinthians 6, verse 5. And the Apostle Paul was describing all the things that he and these other ministers of Christ were going through. But he said, in stripes and imprisonments and tumults and labors and watchings and fastings. That word tumults, that's that same word. So it's translated commotions, confusion, tumults. How many tumults or how much confusion did Paul have to go through? Everywhere he went, when he would preach the gospel, the ones who didn't believe. And what were they typically motivated by when we were looking at those words for envying and strife? We saw both of those words cropping up over and over again, describing what was going on when Paul was preaching the gospel on all of his journeys. The ones who didn't believe what they heard, they would be filled with envy. So this envying and strife would be there, and there would be these tumults, the confusion that would come as a result of that. I mean, if you really want a description to see what it is in action, just again, all we need to do is go through the book of Acts and see the kinds of things that happened. What was the big motivator for the ones who were chasing Paul from city to city on all of his journeys? They were filled with envy, and they caused all that strife, and there was confusion. There were tumults. I mean, that was everywhere he went. They would take them before the magistrates. I mean, there would be people rioting and all of this stuff. I mean, it was a big mess. And we can just read it over and over again, chapter by chapter in the book of Acts. But that's the kind of thing we see when there's envying and strife. And then in 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and or chapter 12, verse 20, 2 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 20. Now, what he was said in chapter 6, that's the kind of thing that Christians would have to endure from unbelievers as part of the persecution that would come from these ones who don't believe and follow the truth. But should that have any place in the Lord's church among God's people? No, but what was Paul afraid of here in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 20? He says, "For I fear lest when I come, I shall not find you such as I would, and that I shall be found unto you such as you would not, lest there be debates, endings, wrath, strifes, backbitings, whisperings, swellings, tumults." So there's that word again, translated tumults. But look at all the other things there. Strifes is mentioned. But what he's mentioning right there in verse 20, this is the kind of thing that would go under confusion and every evil work where you find envy and strife. It's all these things that he's describing right there. Did they have that in the church there in Corinth? They did. I mean, all you had to do is read 1 and 2 Corinthians and what kinds of things were going on. I mean, they were fighting with each other. I'm a Paul, I'm a Apollos, I'm a Peter. Some said, well, I'm a Christ. There weren't enough of those, were there? They were suing each other. I mean, it was all kinds of things going on there, as we know. And it was not gone yet. All of that was not gone yet at this point in 2 Corinthians a year later. So there was a lot of they had a lot of fighting in the church there, and that was not a good thing. It's exactly what James 3 is warning us about, where envy and strife is. There's confusion and every evil work. So there are some examples of that confusion he's talking about. Every evil work, and he uses that word "every" there, Greek word "pos." There's confusion in every evil work. So, is there any left out? If you got envy and strife there, I mean, what's something that's not going to be there that's evil? It's all going to be in there, and that's what he's saying. Every evil work. Now, this is not the typical word that's for evil here in this case. It's something, it's a word for it. It's kind of interesting. Now this, I'll be happy to pronounce or try to pronounce this one. Phallos is the Greek word there. What does that sound like? Foul. That's our English word foul is transliterated from that. That's what it means. So it's foul, every foul work. John 3:20. Let's look at a couple of places where this is. It's only three other places where this word's found. Let's look at it. John 3:20. It's not a bad thing if he says, here's what you're going to have if you've got this devilish wisdom in you with this envy and strife. Here's what's going to go along with it. We need to take a look at that. And then we can check ourselves, look in the mirror, and, okay, is this me? Well, we need to be asking that. John 3, verse 20, he says, "For everyone that doeth evil, and that word evil is that phallos, he says, hateth the light, neither cometh to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved." So that's one case where he uses that that particular word for evil. John 5, verse 29. John chapter 5, verse 29. Well, we'll look at 28 with 29. He says, "Marvel not at this, for the hour is coming in the which all that are in the grave shall hear his voice and shall come forth." "And shall come forth they that have done good unto the resurrection of life, and they that have done evil unto the resurrection of damnation." Well, here he's telling you that those who do phallos, where are they going to end up? So he says there's this bitter envy and strife. If that's there, that's devilish wisdom. And where it is, there's confusion in every evil work, every foul work. And those who are doing those things, they're going to be partaking of the resurrection of damnation. When Jesus comes back and the world ends, who's going to be raised? Who's going to be raised from the dead? All the dead. There's an order to it. The dead in Christ shall rise first. And then they're the ones who are alive on the earth that are in Christ will meet them in the air. Well, those are the those ones that were that are dead in Christ. These are the ones that will have partake of the resurrection of life. But the ones who have done evil, the resurrection of damnation. But everybody's going to be raised, and everybody's going to have a spiritual eternal body that's going to be what they are dwelling in for the rest of eternity in one of two places. Obviously, we know that the ones who partake of the resurrection of life are going to have eternal life and be in heaven. Everybody else, the resurrection of damnation, that means spending an eternity in hell. But that's where everybody's going to go that has done foul. And then Titus chapter 2 and verse 8. Titus chapter 2 and verse 8. All right, 7 and 8. He says, "In all things showing thyself a pattern of good works, in doctrine showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that he that is of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you." That evil, they don't have any foul thing to say it about you. They may try to say it anyway, but it's not based in anything legitimate. So they'll rail things at us, but nobody's going to have anything they can point to be able to accuse us of if we're like what he's describing there. Now, we didn't read verse 6 there, but who in particular is he saying needs to be like that? Well, all Christians should, but who is he specifically addressing in verse 6? Young men. Isn't that interesting? You guys on the back row there, on this side. Well, Stephen, you're still... he's claiming to no longer be a member of their club. Anyway... I still remember you running around when you were like those other ones you're trying to block from getting out here in the aisles. he's talking about young men. So can young men be grown in Christ to the point they can be like he's describing right there, to where nobody would be able to have any foul thing to say about you, about your behavior and what you say and do? Yes is the answer there, because he says do that. So that's pretty interesting. Very encouraging also when we look at that. But as far as that word, we can see it's not anything good. And the word for deed, it's a form of the word, actually, where our English word practice. Proso is the root word for where he says every evil work. Pragma is the word there, but proso is the root, which is the exact word where our word practice comes from in English. So, really, every foul practice is going to be around, and what is this instability or confusion where there's envying and strife. So that's what he's warning us about, and why we need to make sure we don't have that devilish wisdom in us. And this is what happens with whatever is in our hearts. It's true of what is good, and it's also true of what is not. If we have what is good in our hearts, is it going to affect others? Is it going to spread? Is it going to produce other good things? All right, if we have meekness and gentleness in us, which we need to, are those just isolated parts of God's love, or do they work in a fashion when they're present in our hearts and it comes out in our words and our actions that it's going to produce and spread good and produce other good? That's the way it goes. And so what we can see, the damage and destruction that can happen with what's in our hearts, if it's not the love of God that's there. But on the other hand, the good news is that when we have good there, I mean, it's going to produce much good fruit, and it's going to cause great encouragement and provocation to love and to good works and many others. So there's we can either be producing a lot of good for a lot of people, or we're going to be doing a lot of damage. So when we look at ourselves, I mean, we can ask those questions. We can go back to the book of Proverbs. There are lots of proverbs about if you want contention to cease, who do you need to cast out? What's that? He says there's actually three: the talebearer, the scorner, and the angry man. But I mean, all those things are related. But I mean, if there's somebody who's proud, the scorner, you got somebody who's angry, you have somebody who's a talebearer. I mean, is there going to be peace around those, or is there going to be strife? There's going to be strife there. But he speaks about these ones that are particularly connected to causing strife by what's in their hearts. It says, cast them out and that will cease. Well, we can look at ourselves like, well, where in that kind of a person, wherever you put them, and I mean, if they were among us, they'd be causing confusion and strife here. If they left and went somewhere else, what would happen? Same thing. As long as that's in the heart, it's going to come out wherever they are, and whatever's in our hearts is going to come out wherever we are. Now, we really need to look at ourselves in the mirror there. Where we are, what happens? Because something does. Where we are, what happens? Well, we might say, well, nothing. Well, that may be the case. I mean, we may just produce virtually nothing. In the parable of the talents, is that a good thing? No, it's not. But more than likely, we're going to be producing something, in good or bad, maybe some of each. But we need to look at that and see, if wherever we are, if there's constant fighting going on and I mean, we need to see that, because if that's the way we are and wherever we are, that's around. I mean, can we keep, well, it's all of those, everywhere I go, I'm just surrounded by these people that are just as them. Well, if we're around and that's what's always there, is it really right that it is? Is it really true that it's everybody else's problem? Probably not. There may be plenty of others around us that have problems too. But if wherever we go, I mean, if there's constant arguing, fighting, contention, strife, then what is that indicating to us? We got a problem, or problems. I mean, we need to see that and do something about it. Now, what kind of people do we want to be? Don't we want to be somebody that wherever we are, it's going to be producing good? Like what we read about in 1 Corinthians 16 about the household of Stephanus. They had addicted themselves to the ministering of the saints. And so, I mean, that they were producing that good wherever they were with that kind of heart. Wherever you put them, they're going to be producing good. They're going to be serving others. They're going to be encouraging others. And wherever you put that kind of heart, it's just going to be producing good everywhere. Now, isn't that what we want to be? That wherever we are, it's going to be producing encouragement and goodness and righteousness and helping others and having that kind of effect on people. That's what we need to be. I'm going to We really need to be very, very hard on ourselves with that, looking in the mirror that way. I am going to say this, though, having been, most of us here have been together for quite a few years. This is a very unusual group. Trying to find people like what's in this room, as far as years and years of doing good and being ready to do good for people. We've got some very uncommonly good folks here. It's a blessing to be around each other that way. And it makes us all desire to be better. That's not to say that I and the rest of us don't have things that we still need to be working on very hard. But it's very easy to, if we're looking at it in the right way, for us to be very appreciative of the encouragement that we get from each other here. So there's really, if we can't blossom and be encouraged in goodness in the congregation here at North Columbia, it would be hard to find it anywhere where we would be. But we can all keep doing better on that, and which is what we need to do. But we need to look in our hearts and see what's there and what needs to be, what we find that is not good, and we need to do something about that, get rid of that. And then what we need more of that is that wisdom from above, then we need to be working very diligently and with God's help to grow in that. So when we get to the next verse in James 3, 17, these last two verses are going to be the ones that show us all the good that is there from that wisdom that is from above. All these things that if we have his wisdom, all this good that will be produced and be spreading, and this is what we're going to be producing everywhere we are, if that's what we have in our hearts. Lord willing, next week, We'll start digging into verse 17 and see all that good that is very possible with each and every one of us, and what we need to be seeking to grow in.